Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Strap up, sucker. We're about to do this.
Grand Theft Auto 4, the newest update of the infamously violent video game, was released this week and already is racking up record sales. Niko Bellic, the game's protagonist and Balkan murderer auto thief at large in Liberty City, a kind of dark New York, is bigger for the moment than George Clooney. But something else is going on here. Reviewers say it's not just about murder and mayhem anymore. These digital psychopaths and urban nomads feel guilt. They face moral dilemmas. And so do the video game players who maneuver them. Move over, Macbeth. Are video games taking over the global wheel of storytelling and high drama? That's the question. This hour, On Point, Grand Theft Auto 4, bad to the bone, but some call it art. You can join the conversation. Have you played GTA 4? Is it just for blood and guts, or were you immersed in a plot and character and dialogue? Have video games become the new big novels, the new big movies, the digital successor? Or do you think gamers are just kidding themselves here? A word to our listeners, we're talking about a very popular and fairly gruesome video game this hour. The makers warn of violent, strong language, sexual content, drugs, alcohol. Be forewarned. It's all here, and it's a part of the conversation. We've got a great crew with us today. First with me from San Francisco is Chris Baker, senior editor at Wired Magazine. His essay, It's Not Just About Killing Hookers Anymore, appears on Slate.com. Chris, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Lyme Regis in England, Stuart Andrews, self-professed game nut and game reviewer for the online journal Trusted Reviews and the Sunday Times. Stuart Andrews, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Let's get a little flavor of it right in our ear. Here's one of the trailers. You can see them for yourself online. For Grand Theft Auto 4, here's the protagonist, Niko Bellic. He's out of the Balkans, shady background, troubling background, explains that he's come to America, to a city called Liberty City. Looks almost spot on like New York, to try to get away from his criminal past, hopefully to become a better man.
Life is complicated. I killed people, smuggled people, sold people. Perhaps here, things will be different.
Maybe things will be different, says the protagonist in Grand Theft Auto 4, and it's more realistic than ever, and the setting is bigger than ever, and the sales are expected to be right over the moon. They are way ahead of, let's say, CD sales, bigger than blockbuster movies, by a long shot. 70 million copies of Grand Theft sold since it first hit the streets in 97. Chris Baker, let me come first to you. The protagonist, Niko, here says things will be different. Do you find things different in this game from what we've known as video games all along?
I do. The story is kind of a quantum leap over previous outings of the Grand Theft Auto series. Previous Grand Theft Autos had some, you know, pretty clever dialogue, but they were sort of copying licks from movies like Scarface, TV shows like Miami Vice. This feels like a story that was conceived just for this game. The protagonist, we never learn where he's from, but it's some Eastern European country that appears to have undergone some Kosovo-like conflict. So he starts the game weary of death and not wanting to be drawn back into that sort of lifestyle, but then he sort of inexorably is.
I'm watching it, I should say, right now as we speak. My colleague, engineer Dan Rose, has got it. The screen is up on my tabletop here in the studio, and we've got cars flying around a very, very detailed New York City. More natural motion, and you've got characters running around that Dan's propelling. Right now, boy, the cops have got him. He's in their cop car. He's off, and I've seen the trailers here. Once he gets his hand on a machine gun, the cops and just about everybody else go down real fast in this movie. I see a quote here where somebody, an attorney in Florida who hates it, Jack Thompson, calls it a murder simulator for violence against women, cops, and innocent bystanders. Stuart Andrews, what do you make of the new edition of Grand Theft Auto 4?
Well, basically, it's fantastic. I mean, there's no getting past the fact there is a lot of murder in it, there's a lot of crime in it. I mean, you can go around killing people, you can run people over, you can do all these sort of things, and, you know, you can get away with it. But I think this time, as Chris says, you know, there is a sense of something deeper going on. There's a sense of regret, of remorse, of, you know, a character who's trying to get past a sort of a troubled history. It's not just killing anymore. You know, I think it's an easy game to caricature, but it's not just about the crime anymore.
And right now, right on my tabletop, bang, 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 cops and Nico are going at it. Let's hear a little more. Here's another trailer from Grand Theft Auto 4.
You're looking for some people.
We're all looking for that special someone. I need to know what happened. Give me that. Within years, I've been searching. I need this for you. A guarantee that you will find this man.
Don't do anything stupid, cousin!
We have to find him.
Fine, you got it. You want my word? You got my word.
You've got my word. Do with it what you will. And it's supple and detailed and closer to the experience of a movie, except you're in it. You're making it happen. Chris Baker, Boston Globe says nihilism at $60 a pop and wish it didn't exist. Miami Herald says characters and city come alive in Grand Theft Auto 4. First of all, on this issue of sort of moral responsibility, you're saying this time it's different because what?
Well, there's sort of two aspects to a game. There's a central storyline, which you can kind of choose to follow, missions you can choose to go on to advance the story. Or there's a sort of just freewheeling, open-ended, you know, go anywhere and do anything, cause any sort of mayhem. If you follow the storyline, I think you'll find that it's called Grand Theft Auto, and it's about committing crimes. But I think it's just getting closer to kind of the Sopranos territory, where, you know, these are bad people doing bad things, but there's some nuance here. There are shades of gray. People have their own. Comparatively, you know, some people are more ethical than others in this morally gray world.
You write that players, and after all, it's a video game, so players are compelling the story in many ways, propelling the story. They have decisions to make and about whether or not to shoot, and that in this game, they're going to feel those consequences more acutely. What more sophisticated digital representations of people, among others, makes you see the grimace, makes you see the pain when people go down, and that those decisions add up in the course of this game as they might add up in the course of a traditional tragedy.
Yeah, it's sort of paradoxical. I think there's going to be outcry over this game because when the virtual people die, it's more realistic than it's been in past games. But I found it made it harder for me to sort of dismiss it as just a bunch of pixels, a bunch of polygons. You know, these look more like real people, and there was more weight in what I did in this virtual world because of that.
And talk about the narrative richness. What do you mean by that?
Well, there are kind of two sorts of narrative richness here, and one is sort of the central story, the dilemmas that the character faces and the other characters that he interacts with. But the other level of the story is just this big, sprawling city, and it's kind of telling you a story every time you switch on the radio or every time you pass a billboard or every time you overhear a conversation on the street or every time you switch on a TV or log on to the internet. And it's just so deep. They spent so much time, you know, trying to make this feel like a real world. That's what I think would really be surprising to your listeners, is just the depth and breadth of this world.
Stuart Andrews, I'm watching right now, and our man Bellick is out, I don't know, at LaGuardia or Kennedy. He's on the runway on a motorcycle, zipping along between 747s. I mean, it's wild at every moment. It's got its own internal world of radio and TV and internet that you interact with. Do you feel that narrative richness when you play this game? Is it as compelling as a great movie to you? Is it more compelling, Stuart?
I think certainly it's getting there, certainly more than any other game I've ever played, with the possible exception of last year's Bioshock. You know, it's a real feeling, this is a real place, that it's a real world, real characters. And actually, I mean, just even the people that in the movie you'd consider extras, they seem to be kind of getting on with their lives. And as Chris says, you know, all the way through, you've got this kind of background commentary in the radio stations, the signs on the billboards, conversations you have people, you know, you hear people having. And it's a sort of, I think it's talking about, you know, the world we live in today, about America, about all sorts of things that, you know, normally games, I think, don't really talk about.
And, of course, produced largely in the UK. Guys in England and Scotland putting this together, but it's supposed to be New York City. Does it look like New York to you, Chris?
It's uncanny. I mean, it's designed to have a little bit of difference. It's called Liberty City, and everything has kind of its own name, but it's very clear that the Statue of Happiness is the Statue of Liberty, even though it's been tweaked slightly. You can tell that the people who made this spent a lot of time, you know, going around the city and taking pictures. Then at the same time, you do have the sense that this is made by kind of outsiders looking in.
And it is so alive. Even the bystanders, as Stuart says, they've got character. You shove one of them, they may shove back or make a comment. I mean, you're really in a drama. Chris Baker in San Francisco, Stuart Andrews in the UK, please stand by. We're talking about Grand Theft Auto 4. Is this the new world of drama? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Grand Theft Auto 4. It's out this week, the biggest, baddest video game ever. It's bloody, it's brutal. Some say it's art or getting there. We're looking at how video games are evolving and what one of my guests today, Chris Baker, calls their new narrative richness. Even if you hate the narrative, you can join the conversation. Are you a gamer, a player, a fan? Do you have it? The new one, what do you think? Are you a foe, an opponent, an outraged parent? Have you banned it or tried to in your house? And what if video games are the new narrative art form, the successor to novels, the big screen, to Gone with the Wind? Before I forget, I want to extend a special hello to our longtime listeners on KCPW in Salt Lake City. Now hearing us live there, it is great to have you. We really look forward to your calls. And while I'm at it, hello to lots of folks there who may or may not be calling in from different stations around the country. Mendocino, Pacific Grove out in California, Washington, D.C., St. Louis, New York, Austin, Houston, Memphis, all over Oregon and Wisconsin. Great to have you all with us. My guests this hour, Chris Baker has been with us. He's a senior editor at Wired Magazine. Stuart Andrews with us from Lyme Regis in England. He's a reviewer for Trusted Reviews in the Sunday Times there. Let's take a call right now from John in Waltham, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to address a little bit of the controversy that's surrounding the game. I should say that I've played all the previous ones.
Okay.
I'm in the middle of playing the current one, although I haven't finished it. I think specifically the abilities of this the new generation of hardware that's out there is definitely allowing for a richer sort of fidelity.
PlayStation and Xbox and all this stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. So to what your guests were saying, you know, it certainly allows the developers of these same games to create this much more compelling world, not only in the fidelity of the city that you're surrounded in, but also the fidelity of the narrative or the richness of the narrative. But specifically about the controversy, I think what hasn't changed with the technology is what's most compelling about these games from the very start has been the freedom that it allows the player to engage in. And a lot of what is creating outrage in the media games is specifically about what players themselves choose to do within the game world.
Well, let's not gild the lily on that. Let's not soften it up. It's really the freedom to do just about anything. I mean, murder, rape, you know, you can beat anybody you want with a baseball bat.
I should say that you actually can't rape someone in the game.
Looks pretty close, but okay, you're the player. I haven't.
Every sexual encounter that's in the game is consensual that I've seen.
Okay, okay.
The player takes part in anyway.
What do you think of that freedom? And what do you think of the fact that you and many, many others are drawn to it? Is that, what is it? Is it sick? Is it art? Is it, does it help us work through the sort of dramas of the human condition the same way, I don't know, Shakespeare did?
Well, I think like many other, like any other art form, it really holds up a mirror to ourselves as people and how you experience the game outside of the main narrative that you can choose to play or not really is an expression of how you like to engage in play.
Play. And Chris Baker, is this getting to your point? I mean, there's the freedom, and with the freedom comes the sort of, increasingly in the game, the consequences and a very active way of engaging them.
I think one of the draws of games is that there aren't consequences where there aren't actions in the real world, and that, you know, you can turn it off and turn it back on, you know. You don't really die if you crash your car and go flying through the windshield. And I think, you know, it must be said that this is make-believe in the same way that the violence in a movie is make-believe. And it's certainly, I think, it should also be said that this game is rated M for mature, which is the video game equivalent of an R rating, meaning it can't be sold to kids. It is an entertainment.
But you know many will end up playing it.
Yeah, and, you know, that certainly is troubling, and it is, just as it's troubling that kids like me, you know, found ways to see horror movies we really wanted to when we were 11 or 12. I do think, though, that this is a valid form of entertainment for adults.
Well, I mean, I guess there's no way around that. With 70 million copies out there and millions more headed out the door right now, it's clearly entertaining people, whatever you think of it. John, thanks for your call. Stuart Andrews, do you care about the moral dilemma side or the narrative richness side of this game, or is it really still primarily the thrills and spills? And again, I'm watching it right here on my tabletop. You know, cars flying every which way, and, there's someone just popped in the face. Is that what you come to it for, Stuart, the thrills or the depths?
I think with a game like this, it has to be both. And I mean, because one of the ways this game really succeeds is in doing both so well. I mean, just minute by minute, you know, the enjoyment of playing the game, of doing silly things, of suddenly finding something that you wonder whether you can do it, and then you find out that you can. You know, I mean, not just, you know, sort of the shooting and all that sort of thing, but just sort of silly stuff like doing silly stunts on a motorcycle or, you know, suddenly finding an internet cafe and wondering if you can go online and, you know, going through and looking at personal ads and things like that. You know, it's an enjoyable experience, but I think what makes this particular Grand Theft Auto so great is the kind of narrative richness we're talking about. You know, it's the way that it does make you think, it does make you feel, and, you know, you start thinking about things in the same way that you would with, say, you know, a great crime movie, like, say, something like The Departed, mm-hmm. or The Godfather, or Goodfellas, or something like that, or, you know, as Chris was saying earlier, The Sopranos,
mm-hmm.
you know, you are thinking about, you know, what happens when people are violent to each other, how, you know, violence can become cyclical, that sort of thing. And, and that sort of stuff makes it a much more interesting and rounded and deep experience, I think, this time around.
All that, plus you're in it, and players, gamers, talk about it can take them days to come out of it after they've spent hours immersed. John, thanks for your call. Let's listen to another exchange here. Here's the sort of main character that a gamer drives here, Nico, and Liberty City crime boss by the name of Vlad doing a little business. And you can hear the dialogue, the acting really evolved compared to video games of yore. It may not be Sir Laurence Olivier, but, I mean, the world may be still pretty awful, but Liberty City is getting to be a little deeper, a little more complicated place.
Listen, where were we?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So I need you to head up to Duke's and get a car for me. It's a silver blister, and it's parked in the projects by EIC subway station. Okay?
Sure. You got keys?
No. You're cool. I need you to take the car. Owes Mikhail some money. Take his car instead, huh?
Okay. Maybe no Oscar yet there for that dialogue, but it's real dialogue, and if you haven't seen it, you'd be surprised at the suppleness of what's going on the screen. I want to welcome to our conversation right now from New York, Stephen Johnson. He's author of Everything Bad is Good for You, How Today's Popular Culture is Actually Making Us Smarter. He's co-founder of the website Outside.in, worked as a columnist for Discover magazine and Slate and Wired. Stephen Johnson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Let me read you something, Stephen, from the L.A. Times. This is Tim Rutten writing. He says, you know, Grand Theft Auto 4 is a work of genius, but it's genius in the service of nothing more than sensation and profit. He's basically saying interactive video. He says it's now an art form in search of an artist. What do you think, Stephen?
Well, I think, you know, it's I guess I would disagree a little bit with some of the assumptions that this conversation has had up until now.
Let's hear it.
And that is to say that there's this kind of assumption that art equals narrative and storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And the question we're all wrestling with, and Stuart and Chris have written great stuff about this, the question is, have games hit the kind of Sgt. Pepper or Birth of a Nation moment where, you know, a kind of a popular form, whether it's music or movies, suddenly reaches a level of kind of depth and complexity and we say, okay, this is art. This is a real cultural achievement.
Yep.
And I one of the things that I've been arguing for a while is that games have already hit that point. But they haven't hit that as a storytelling form, as a narrative form. And in fact, I think it's fundamentally kind of misunderstanding what games have been about to date to think of them in terms of stories. They actually do something quite different. Now, I should say –
Well, it's certainly about – they're about odysseys and voyages and a whole lot of violence. But if it's not a narrative, how would you describe it?
I think there are two components, and both of which have been touched upon, but I think that they're not narrative experiences. The first is the complexity of the world you're exploring, which you're not necessarily exploring in a storytelling way. You're exploring it in just a, you know, this is a really interesting space. I want to walk through it. In that sense, the games are much closer to architecture as a form than they are to the novel or cinema. So we don't go into a great building and say, well, the plot line isn't very interesting for this. I don't feel the characters are very close to me. You say, this space is so interesting, and look at all the things that are suddenly possible in this world here. And secondly, what makes games so interesting and so rich and so complex is the rule structures that govern the games and the way in which you learn to play by those rules and discover those rules. And in that sense, a game is much closer to, say, chess than it is to a great novel. It's about learning, you know, what are my objectives? How do I discover what my objectives are? How do I figure out the local things that I can do on my way to these objectives? And games are enormously complex in terms of that rule structure. They're much more complex than chess is, far, far more complex than chess is in terms of the rule structure. And those are the elements where games, I feel, have already achieved great, you know, kind of cultural success and richness. And the storytelling is there, but when you're playing these games, you aren't really thinking, I wonder how this turns out. I'm hoping that this character, you know, will really make it in the end. I really identify with them. You're thinking, how am I going to solve this problem? And that experience is a really interesting one and a really deep one and actually involves a great deal of intelligence, but it's not an emotional, psychological kind of experience the way you get out of great novels or great movies.
Chris Baker, what do you say? All that is true to what you're writing, but you do write as well that it's full of surprise and laced with moral dilemmas, which I don't really associate with architecture or chess.
No, and I think, you know, when film first appeared, it was sort of it looked like this medium that was taking things from so many other mediums, and I think games definitely the game maker can sort of pull all the tools of a filmmaker. You've got your audience for much much longer than a filmmaker does. You know, the experience of playing a game takes as long as, you know, reading a novel, if not longer.
But is it mainly about, as Stephen says, the rule structure, the matrix of rules, the design, the absolutely complex and fascinating design that you're operating within, or what happens, you know, inside those rules?
Yeah, I think, especially if you think broadly about games, you know, games including something like Tetris, including something like The Sims or Sim City. That is something that kind of jumps out at the player. In my piece, I talk about Will Wright, the creator of SimCity, talks about the sense of going into a game and as you play, very quickly getting a sense of the possibility space, the open-endedness of the game. And that's something that, you know, just through looking at it, looking at that surface level of the the characters and the dialogue. You can't get a sense of that possibility space. And that's something – it's something that is also really important to the person playing the game.
Roger Ebert, the famous film critic, wrote in 2001 already. He said, a year or so ago, I rashly wrote that video games could not be art. And tells us that inspired a firestorm among gamers. And then in that essay, which is kind of a landmark in this whole conversation, he ends up saying, I enjoy lots of entertainments, but it's important to know them for what they actually are. He says, I like the circus as much as the ballet. I like crime novels. He's not really prepared to give games, or for that matter, a whole lot of movies that might be close to them, like Spider-Man or Star Wars, you name it, the moniker of art. Listeners, what do you think? We've got Audrey calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Audrey, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've been watching my son, who's 22 now, play all the iterations of Grand Theft Auto.
Are you shocked and horrified? It is not nice or easy on women.
It's not nice or easy on women. I really enjoyed. My son's a very thoughtful, very peaceful, very talented young man, and I've enjoyed the opportunity to have really good conversations about just those topics with him around these games, and also. I think this is a way for young men to think about and deal with a very violent society. So it's been really good for me to watch him play these and to talk to him about it. We've had some good conversations around this stuff.
But Audrey, tell me how that works. I mean, I'm watching right now on my tabletop. We're in the Liberty City Bar Trianglo, and Nico is just blasting the tarnation out of everybody. It's shotguns, head-to-head, boom, 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 people strewn all over the floor. That's the kind of thing I'm sure you've watched over your son's shoulder. What's the tender, enlightening conversation that comes out of it?
Well, later on, Nico's going to get in the car, if it's like the other games, and he's going to have the radio on. So at that point, I say to my son, oh, turn the radio on. I love the radio. And we listen to the incredibly witty radio stations that are on there. We'll talk about that. We can open
them. Sometimes including news reports of the murders he's just committed.
Right, right. Hmm. Our conversations are not about, they don't have an end, and I'm not using it, and I haven't used it as a teaching tool. I've told him what I feel about that, and he's told me how he feels about it. And we've also talked about the non-linearity of games, because I really don't understand it. We have an ongoing bet that he'll read Jane Austen if I'll play a video game. Well, he's already Pride and Prejudice, and I can't make it through Grand Theft Auto.
He kept up his end of the bargain, and you can't do it.
I can't do it. It's a very strange world, but I'm really happy, and he's really happy to have me experience that with him, and I see it as a great jumping-off point and a great place for us to meet our minds. It's really great in that way, and it's ridiculous to think about banning these things. There are ways, as I said, for young men, thoughtful young men, to think about the society.
Audrey, you're a broad-minded mom, and it sounds like a good conversation in your house, but Stuart Andrews in the UK, how about it? Are you going to use this as a little prompt to conversation with your children, or do you advise it for that? This is rough stuff.
Well, I mean, at the moment, I've only got a 2-year-old girl, so I think she's probably a little bit too young for Grand Theft Auto.
I hope so.
But, no, I mean, certainly I intend to play games with my daughter. She already watches my wife and I play games, every now and then. And, I've no doubt she'll get a lot out of them. As Stephen was saying earlier, it's not just always about narrative. Sometimes it's about just the joy of playing, of, going into a new world in Super Mario Galaxy, jumping from spot to spot, finding out all the things he can do. And that's fun, and I hope, my daughter will go through that sort of thing, explore it, and, just have fun. Nothing wrong with that.
The one other thing, Tom, if I if I could just build on what Audrey was saying, which is that, I was thinking when you guys were talking earlier about how realistic it is in terms of its portrait of New York City. And, of course, one of the crucial ways in which it's not realistic is that New York City is less violent than it's been in 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
Right? It's the safest large city in America. And that's one of the ways in which I think the effects of these games are kind of overstated, in that the generation playing them is the least violent generation since the 50s.
So maybe pour it out right here and maybe not there, but then sometimes we see what looks like overlap. Stuart Andrews in Lyme Regis, thank you so much for being with us this hour. Keep on playing, I guess. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Grand Theft Auto 4, the biggest, baddest video game ever. It's bloody, it's brutal. Some say, maybe, it's art. It's just out this week. Millions of copies on their way to the hands of all kinds of players all over the world. We're looking at how video games are evolving and their new narrative richness is the phrase that's on the table, even if you hate the narrative. Behind us right now, a scene from Grand Theft Auto 4 in a strip club. I'm actually watching it playing out on the table here, and that old Nico, he just keeps running and jumping in cop cars and shooting, flying over the city in a helicopter by night. Liberty City, it's called, but it looks for all the world just like New York, right down, we're told, to particular streets and neighborhoods. Bump into somebody on the Upper East Side, they're going to be suited up and looking pretty, pretty rich and respond just that way. Other parts of town, other kinds of people. It is a rich environment. We won't pretend otherwise. It is just as violent and nasty as you want to make it. And the player is pretty much in charge. Chris Baker's been with us from San Francisco, senior editor at Wired. His article in Slate on Slate.com is, "It's not just about killing hookers anymore." Well, okay. Stephen Johnson's with us, author of Everything Bad is Good for You, co-founder of the website Outside.in. Right now, Jacques is calling from Quincy, Massachusetts. Jacques, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment that I've been listening to everyone say this is a realistic game and it's real, and that might be so in the form of the aesthetics and the buildings and like that,
yeah,
stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the consequences of the actions that these particular players take, I mean, in so much as what happens after they get caught, or if they, there's no reality there. There's no judges, there's no jury, there's no prison time. Maybe that's too boring, or, you know, maybe the game may start over, but there's no consequences, and people don't realize that.
No judge, no jury, maybe no funeral, and no prison time. Jacques, let me put it to Chris Baker. Chris, what do you say? Does that undercut the richness you're talking about?
Well, certainly there is a limit to how far they're going to push realism in terms of things that they don't deem to be fun, in terms of dull things. I think to gamers' point of view, one of the greatest changes about this new game is the fact that you don't have to drive across this huge environment, which can take, you know, 20 minutes, especially at rush hour.
Mm.
So, yeah, and one of the things that falls by the wayside is the real world repercussions, the going to court and the filing motions and the going to prison for 50 years. That is, I think it's part of the fact that this is, you know, at some level this is entertainment and this is escapism and just the way an action movie would sort of skip over that stuff.
Or not even an action movie.
As well.
Steve Johnson, Steven?
Not even an action movie. I mean, you know, we all, I think, at this point accept that Scorsese is a great artist, right?
Mm.
And so, you know, characters go away, you know, to prison in Goodfellas, but he doesn't stop the movie for 30 minutes to show the day-to-day drudgery of prison life, right? So we
right.
accept that entertainment that is also aiming at the level of art is going to err on the side of not being boring, and sometimes that means that you don't see the full consequences of people's actions.
But Scarface doesn't come with prison time either. The Godfather, if they go to jail, the next time you see them, they're out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's go to Richard in Franklin, Massachusetts. And Jacques, thanks for your call. Richard, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thanks Hi. For having me. I'm
yeah.
a long-time listener.
Great.
I would just like to mention earlier how we were talking about the depth of the narrative and also the possibility of a word that I haven't heard yet, which is satire. These games are actually not just telling us about these urban environments, these cities that they're portraying, but they're actually sort of making fun of them. They're poking fun at them and making light of the situation. For instance, you can watch the television, and you see people trying very hard to sell you things, almost to the point of absurdity. There's a man who's selling a used car, but they're all broken, the prices are all ridiculous.
Right.
And there's a Saturday morning cartoon show that you can watch that shows American soldiers traveling through space. I believe the name of it was a Republican Space Police. And they like to travel to other other planets and they meet aliens who bring them peace offerings, and the Americans just shoot them because they don't understand. And they say something like, those guys don't speak American, and then they shoot them. And so these are real ideas of social commentary that really show the problems of our society and make us look at them almost in a tongue-in-cheek sort of way. And this whole dark comedy aspect of it really hasn't been addressed.
Let us pick it up, Richard. And it's important. And it's to visualize that. You have to imagine that within the game, and I'm watching it right now, Nico is whooping the tar out of somebody's car with a baseball bat. Okay, but there's TV within the game. There's internet. There's radio. There are even stand-up comedians, real-world stand-up comedians. You can go to a comedy club and hear their routines. Let's get a little flavor of that. I've got a clip right here. Richard, thanks for raising it. Here's, as a player, you can get emails from other characters. You can tune into all kinds of radio stations. We like that. Here's an ad on one of those stations for a gun club called the Liberty City Gun Club. Satire, social commentary, we report, you decide.
Tired of living in a violent society? If every citizen was armed, no one would be dumb enough to shoot people. It's exactly the ethos our founding fathers had when they wrote the Constitution and then changed it, which is what makes it sacred now. Come mingle with safety-minded people like you at the Liberty City Gun Club. Our nation is still the world leader in one thing, armaments. Tuesday night is singles night at the Liberty City Gun Club, where we smile, flirt, and then blow things up. And you can too. Meet that lucky someone and try speed dating with an exciting RPG. Nothing says excitement like a night out with a small caliber semi-automatic weapon. Get social at the Liberty City Gun Club. Liquor, guns, and fun.
Okay, our nation is still number one in one thing, armaments. There it is. I mean, you can't deny they're having some fun here. Chris, you poke around, and this thing's got all kinds of surprises.
Oh, absolutely. Kind of that sort of really dark satire has been, you know, a watchword for the series since its inception. And, I mean, keep in mind, this, you know, this was spearheaded by a couple of guys from London. The development team is in Scotland,
yeah,
a country that has, you know, very few guns and very little gun violence.
But it's clear what they think of the U.S. of A., or it's a surrogate here.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the whole game is sort of a critique of American culture and sort of the way it's reflected in our action movies and you know, hip-hop music.
Hey, let's get a call from Salt Lake City, Utah, no less. KCPW delivers. Cindy in Salt Lake, it's great to have you. You're on the air, Cindy.
Hello, Tom. Thank you. I have a daughter who plays. She's 14 years old, and I think it's not usual for a girl to play this game, and so I was just wondering anyone's thoughts on if it can kind of label my daughter. She's, you know, a student athlete, does all those things, but just finds these kinds of things very intriguing, and I worry, I guess, about the impact of if others know she's playing this game.
It takes my breath away a little bit, Cindy. Have you watched over her shoulder or as she plays, or?
Yes, and I think there's a stage where kids, especially teenagers, go through where they love to be scared to death. Do you know what I mean? It's
yes, I do, sure.
A horror movie.
Yeah.
And I think for her, it's, you know, for kids, it's a way to say, gee, can I handle some of the scariness of life in a picture or a game?
No kidding.
I worry about some of the others.
Cindy, stick with us. Stick with us right there, Stephen Johnson. Chris, this is no joke. Here's a mom, 14-year-old daughter. She's playing Grand Theft Auto. She's trying to get a handle on that. Stephen?
Well, it's a really interesting question. It is true that a game like this has, you know, a distinct majority of the players are boys or men, although there are a bunch of other games like The Sims, for instance, that girls and women played just as much
sure.
as men, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I feel like I think what we've been saying about violence and storytelling and art is very true. And what the caller is saying about kind of exploring the limits of that, you know, I have young children and I was just reading them Hansel and Gretel in the kind of the original version. And it's a story about a serial killer. I mean, it is absolutely a story about a serial killer who comes and eats children and cooks them, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
So that's what is designed for 6-year-olds or 8-year-olds or 10-year-olds to read. That's been a part of our culture. It's this understanding that art is about pushing the kind of limits of human experience and living at the edges of those experiences so you can figure out how to kind of orient yourself in kind of normal life. And that's what we're seeing projected onto, you know, a kind of a modern landscape in something like Grand Theft Auto with a lot of humor, which is crucial. That was a very important point from the last caller.
But kind of normal life, maybe the operative phrase there. I mean, this is pretty out on the edge. I'm not a player, but you can – I mean, you can pick up hookers anywhere here. You can whoop them with a baseball bat when you're done. Chris, what do you think about a 14-year-old girl who's playing? Is she kind of self-immunizing here? Because after all, a lot of young men around her have been and are going to be playing games like this. Cindy's thinking, well, maybe this is a way she kind of, you know, toughens up for the world we're in. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'd say, we should step back and say this game is rated M for mature, meaning can't be sold to people under 17. And I think every parent should, you know, sort of learn about it, you know, read up on it before they buy it for their kids. You know, spot check your kids to see if they've got their hands on it. And definitely, the way the caller said, sort of, you know, keep tabs on the kids if you choose to let them play it. I think that, you know, I go back to my own experience as an 11 or 12 year old. And I did, you know, there were times I snuck downstairs at 2 a.m. to see Stephen King's Creepshow because it just seemed really cool to me. And I think, you know, kids are kind of interested in that thing and in that sort of thing. And I think there's some room for leeway. And I think it's not necessarily a bad thing if they should sort of want to explore this, but, you know, definitely keep tabs on them.
Cindy, you know, the one thing I would say is, I mean, as a parent, it is rated mature. If your daughter's playing, it's a decision in some ways that you're making there. Seems to me, you'd better at least watch a bunch of it yourself and get in there with her a bit so that you can have a real conversation about it if she's going to be doing it, don't you think?
Right, yes, and I'm still making that decision, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, she bought it 2 days ago, and I'm half of mine to just take it back and the other half not. I mean, she hasn't played this yet. She's the Halo kid, but wanting, you know, and got this. And so I told her I would try it, you know, with her, and we'll try and make this decision. And that's why I was wondering, you know, do kids get labeled? There's a distinct group that seem to play these kinds of things, and they don't seem to be girls, and so, like I said, it's more the outer world and her inner world. But, you know, I can sit and watch it with her, and we can make those decisions. What I can't seem to find is some kind of a rearview mirror on what this says about her in her, you know, in her community.
You know, it's a great question, and I think it may be more than we can answer right here. But we'll all mull it over, and, you know, the vicarious parent and everybody thinking about what you're up against. Sounds like you've got some hours of Grand Theft Auto ahead of you. Good luck, Cindy. Thanks for your call from Salt Lake. Let's get one from Royal Oak, Michigan. Mark, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Great show today. The question I have relates more to this is an art form, and the reason I bring it up is that if you have eyes and you can see, if you have ears you can hear, then, you know, music and things that you see, paintings, for example, can be interpreted a different way. But in the gaming world, your ability to play the game or progress through the game, I think, would limit, you know, how much you get to see. I mean, I only played the first Grand Theft Auto, and I wasn't very good at it. Mm-hmm. So I only went to, like, a basic level, but I never got beyond anything. And so, I mean, if your ability to use the game influences whether or not it's art, is it really art, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
That's a very interesting question. Chris, it's true. I mean, here I'm watching right now, Nico's running around Coney Island, but it is about depths and skill at the game, and if you don't get way into it, you're not going to see some of the nuance. Of course, infamously, when they came out with Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, if you got deep enough in it, there was porno buried in the middle of this thing, and they caught hell for that. But what about the issue that we have from Royal Oaks?
Well, yeah, there was if you were a geek and dug around in the source code and pieced it back together, a player couldn't encounter that through normal play. But definitely, the point he's making is absolutely valid. You know, we use the term difficult, you know, to talk about some avant-garde art movie. But the fact of the matter is, you know, 2 or 3 hours later, you might be completely lost, but you're going to get through and see the end of it.
You've all seen the same thing.
Yeah, whereas a game, you know, that controller's got 14 buttons and two joysticks, and learning to use it is like learning to drive the car. And it definitely begs the question, you know, are games like movies and comic books and rock and roll before them, these mediums were, there was sort of a wariness when they first appeared. There was a sense of, you know, are these ruining our kids? Will games not get over that point because there is such a high barrier to entry because they are so much harder to sort of master?
Mm-hmm. Stephen, if we're going in this direction, let's say, and for many, time on games is already, has to be time away from books or movies. You know, do we end up a culture more informed about the human condition, humanity, you name it, or less?
Well, as the games continue to evolve, hopefully they're going to bring a lot into that conversation. I mean, one of the most popular games of the last couple of years is a game called Civilization, where what you do in the game for fun is recreate the entire course of human, economic, and political history. I mean, that's what the kids are doing for fun as well as playing Grand Theft Auto. So there's a lot of sophistication there. But I think, you know, to connect the last two callers' points, the other reason to sit down with your kids and watch them play these games is not just to kind of, you know, check in on the violence and figure out whether this is appropriate to them, but because you will be impressed at how much thinking they have to do and how much patience they have to use in making their way through these games. It's the skills we normally don't associate with gameplay, but it's actually crucial to making your way through a game.
You will also be impressed with how many bullets fly. They're dying on Coney Island right now as I watch Grand Theft Auto 4. Stephen Johnson, author of Everything Bad is Good for You, thank you so much for joining us for the conversation today.
My pleasure.
And Chris Baker, senior editor at Wired, his piece at Slate.com got us hooked right in here. Chris Baker, thanks very much for the piece and for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.